Archive Poltergeists. Written by Van Roosberg and read by Paul Sassolt. A Magnus Archives fic. It began when Martin decided, finally, that he wanted to give John a taste of his own medicine. Constant talks from Tim and Sasha about valuing himself, about how John was not treating him well enough, about, God, Martin, at least stop pampering the man with tea, had finally worn him down. The fact that John had recently gone off on him 3 times within the last 2 reports he had turned in didn't hurt. Well, it did hurt. Martin's patience, that is. So it started with Martin allowing himself to snap. Just a little. He would later wave it off to Tim and Sasha, claim that, oh no, I honestly didn't realize it actually swapped the two until after John drank it. It wasn't some nefarious plan. The truth was, however, that Martha was just about done offering tea to a man who would drink his tea every day without so much as a thank you. Only being told his work ethic was lacking, or that some notation he had made was not up to institute standards. So yes, he had swapped the sugar for salt. John took his tea with a cloying amount of sugar anyway, to the point where Martin wondered why on earth John even drank tea. No milk, all sugar. Just order a hot chocolate for Christ's sake. That day, Martin went through the routine of preparing what he deemed his afternoon tea duties at the archives. Prepping the 3 different kinds of tea for his colleagues, John, who had never talked about his tea preferences, could take whatever standard English breakfast or Earl Grey Martin had already been making anyway. Prepping the kettle, the 4 different mugs, milk, sugar, honey, and so on and so forth. Martin always made John's first, because he guessed the man probably let it go cold anyway. Half the time he never even looked up from whatever statement he was embroiled within. This time, Martin made John's tea last, with a little more glee than usual. He patiently delivered mugs of tea to Tim and Sasha, receiving a "you're a saint" and a "just what I needed, thanks" from each of them, and drops off his own mug on his desk for later. He quietly knocks on John's office, and when there is a stiff grunt of response and no sound of John's voice reciting a statement, he opens the door. There was a need to act completely and utterly normal, as if nothing was wrong. Luckily, though this was always a guilty skill, Martin was practiced at hiding any emotion and, well, lying. He smiled, making sure there was that constant trademark Martin nervousness laced in. "On the coaster, please," John says, not even looking at Martin. Ah, shit. Of course, John, sorry. "Just pay attention next time," he said dismissively. Martin hovered. Usually he didn't do it on purpose. This time it definitely was on purpose. John's gaze slid over to Martin as he whirred at a knuckle on his hand. "Did you need something, Martin?" John asked. "No, sorry. I was just wondering if you needed anything else? Biscuits or help transporting anything?" Martin gave another flash of a nervous smile. This was normal behavior. Martin was behaving normally. John shook his head, but he did pick up the mug of tea, which Martin counted as a win. "No, Martin. All I need is your research on cases 012-1102 and 012-905. Thank you very much," John said primly, taking a sip of the tea. His face promptly scrunched up. His eyebrows knit together. He drew up his nose in disgust. And the twist of his mouth couldn't be interpreted as anything except utter distaste. Martin was ecstatic. Martin watched with hidden glee as John struggled to swallow the small mouthful of tea he had drunk. It must have hurt to swallow that much salt. Martin had waited and stirred the tea until the salt was fully dissolved. God, John's face! This was better than he'd imagined. Okay, act normal. Oh my god, John, is something wrong? What just happened? Martin asked. Maybe laying the concern on a little thick. John spluttered, confused for a moment before glaring at Martin. What happened is your bloody tea's... Time to sell it. The tea? Martin said, cutting John off quickly. He swiped the mug from John's desk, took a swig and swallowed it. God, that was awful. He'd need to wash his mouth out after this. What's wrong with it? It tastes fine, Martin said. He smiled, projecting as much bright-eyed innocence as he could. A pause. Martin looked at John, fighting to keep a straight face, as John seemed to grow more and more confused. John, hesitantly, tasted the tea again. He grimaced, before looking at Martin with narrowed eyes. There is something wrong with the tea. Keep it going, Martin thought. What's wrong? I didn't taste anything off, he said, displaying picture-perfect innocence. It tastes wrong, John said, the grimace still on his face. And how is it wrong, John? Martin asked. Maybe John will get this point if he doubles down on his revenge with extra emphasis. Stop telling me I'm wrong all the time, John. If you can't even explain what's wrong with just tea, maybe you should realize your criticisms aren't constructive, John. It's salty. Tea isn't supposed to be salty, John pointed out, and Martin refrained from rolling his eyes. Astute as always. What would you like me to do about that, John? What's the best way to fix this error? Martin doubled down on a tea work parallel. He glared directly into John's face, before dragging his gaze slowly and deliberately to the most recent report on John's desk with his own name on it. Martin figured subtlety was maybe a lost cause here. It's salt. In tea. I'm sure it is, John. Martin made sure to use his most patronizing voice. He would stop when he started to actually feel bad, instead of just vindicated. But what should I do about that? What do you even mean? The tea is not supposed to be salty. Why did you put salt in the tea? John looked baffled. Martin tried not to laugh. John really couldn't even give advice on what to do in this situation, huh? It would be so easy to say don't add salt to the tea. But no, he had to keep insisting on what was already apparent without offering a solution. Maybe Martin should be grateful that this appeared to be a genuine character flaw in John and not just pure spite aimed at him. John wasn't trying to be utterly unhelpful every time he yelled at Martin. He was just unable to give helpful feedback. Like, in general. God, the weird tannin and salt combination still sat on his tongue. So, what should I be doing? Adding more sugar? Throwing it out? Taking out the salt? Take out the salt, obviously. How would I take out the salt? This was, perhaps, beginning to feel a bit mean to Martin, looking at John folding his arms almost petulantly. He looked like a pouting child. John growled. Or at least, that's the sound Martin thought he was trying to make. Just do it, Martin, or dump it out and redo the whole thing. It's just tea. John turned his head away indignantly, and Martin continued to hold back laughter. I don't know if it's possible to take out salt that has apparently been dissolved into the tea. Should I make a new cup? Would you like more tea? Maybe he should be subtler, but he was still not sure if John was even getting the message. Martin watched John follow his gaze to the report with Martin's name on it. There was a moment where Martin could see the gears turning in John's brain. A myriad of emotions flickered across John's face, too fast for Martin to catch all of them. There was anger, obviously, along with confusion, surprise, and what looked like fear. No, guilt? Something almost remorseful, maybe? There was another long moment before John schooled his expression into not his regular disdain, but something neutral. Martin might say it was a smile, but at this point he thought the closest John could get to that was a grimace. John coughed, clearing his throat. I will be fine, Martin. I have some, work to do. Martin turned to leave, mentally battling himself to stop from smiling before he heard John speak again. Thank you, Martin. The battle was a lost cause. Martin rushed away from John's door, out the room, around the corner, down the hallway, before he broke down laughing, unable to hold it in. He could hardly believe he had just done that. God, John's face! His genuine laughter turned rapidly to hysterics as he felt the reality sink in. He was so fired. It took John at least 10 minutes of gathering himself to work up the courage to even leave his office. He made it, though, he did. Thank God, Martin didn't seem to be anywhere around, at least not in the assistance area outside John's office. Just as John was peering around, Tim strolled into the larger room, whistling. This could work. Tim, could you maybe come here? John asked. Tim quirked a brow, and John saw the confusion painted on his face at the picture John was making. The door to his office cracked open, just his head and shoulders visible. Tim didn't track outright, but John saw it in his eyes. Sure, boss, what's going on? Tim asked, strolling into John's office. Tim didn't sit down. John gingerly sat in his chair, shuffling the papers around nervously. He placed the most recent report, Martin's, at the top, and paused. This was going to be excruciating. Am I a bad boss? Have I been unfair to you all? John was not looking at Tim. He was not going to look at Tim. In fact, John thought he would not be looking at people in general from now on. The looking could stop. John looked at Tim. The expression on Tim's face was strained, as if he was halfway to a grimace but decided to look pitying instead. Well, Tim said, voice as awkward as his expression. I see. It's not all bad, maybe? It's bad, then. Tim groaned. Yes, John, okay, it's pretty bad. You're like, a different person than the one session I knew from research days? And, well, sorry, but it's not exactly a positive difference. Yes, John started. You're just so tied up in this whole, professionalism thing, except it's just kind of, well, bullshit, isn't it? John bristled. All it's doing is making you grouchy or something, and, like, honestly, rude? Or mean, or whatever. Look, I know you're under a lot of pressure, but you're not even listening to us. You're just yelling when something's wrong and handing out more work. Tim flapped a small bundle of papers he had a hold on at John, who spluttered. This is our workplace. I am supposed to... And the work isn't even, making sense sometimes? You've told me to find some guy's info through online census records before. Not even mentioning how illegal that probably is. That's definitely more Sasha's kind of work. She's our lady in the van, just like Martin's our approachable teddy bear. He's a lot better at getting information from parents and grandmothers than me or Sasha. Just like I'm the one better suited to the real groundwork, working my way into police stations and official buildings. I can't just fraternize or mess around. I'm your boss, Tim. Yeah, and a shit one. Tim! Tim leveled John with a look. Capital L, italics. John felt it in his bones. I'm going to be very honest with you. Like you wasn't already. We don't care. You being our boss doesn't mean you can't speak to us, for God's sake. Sash and I knew you in research, John, and it's like we don't know you at all anymore. It's like you don't know us anymore. You're just pulling away from all of us. And for what? Some non-existent expectations you think someone has of you to be all cold and prickly. Newsflash, John. Yelling at Martin doesn't make you professional. It just makes you an arse. Tim pulled his arms across his chest and stared at John. His mouth was set in a harsh line, one John wasn't used to. Well, he had been seeing it more in recent months, hadn't he? John sighed. Wasn't this exactly what he had called Tim in to talk about anyway? Hadn't he asked for this sort of thing? And Tim wasn't exactly wrong, was he? You're right, Tim. I'm sorry. I admit I was absorbed by the concept of staying distant, unattached, professional. I wanted to be taken seriously, I guess. And I thought staying the same as research, wasn't helping. John took a deep breath. I don't really know what I'm doing, being handed all this. Some promotion I honestly don't know what to do with. A role I don't know what to do with. I don't even have the qualifications for this. You know that? Elias just said I should take it. That he was counting on me. That it fit me. And I... Well... It was a promotion. So... I'm sorry, Tim. I didn't know what I was doing. I was taking that pressure out on you and the others. It was unfair, and it was wrong. Tim nodded along as John spoke, winced at the sound of Elias' name, and smiled when John looked up at him to apologize. That's good, John. I appreciate that. I don't know what was up with your whole... Tim waved a hand around, frowning, and John nodded. Promotion thing, either. I don't know enough to touch that. But the rest of it, that's good. Really good. I'm definitely not the only one that needs to hear that apology. But if you're going to start trying, that's good enough for me. For now. Thank you, Tim, John said, letting out a breath as he relaxed into his chair. It was only then that he realized how tense he had been. It was good to know that whatever John did, it wasn't irreparable, at least. He rubbed his fingers over the bridge of his nose. Tim also seemed to relax, his shoulders falling and arms uncrossing as he finally came to sit in the chair across John's desk. He propped his chin on one hand, smiling vaguely in John's direction. What prompted this anyway, boss man? Not that I don't love the impromptu therapy session, but I don't think this is the norm as you were, Tim said. John groaned and gestured towards the teacup still on his desk. Tim looked confused. The tea? Some tea made you wake up and grow a conscience? John glared, and Tim shrugged. Okay, a little unfair, but... What? Martin bringing you this every day like a personal tea caddy is what made you realize you yell at him so much? No, John sighed, removing his hand to look at Tim and tea properly. It's Martin's commentary on my working practices, as his boss. Tim lit up, and John thought perhaps that he had made a mistake. Tim reached forward. You don't want to drink that, John said. Tim grinned, and Downward is definitely too much of that not tea. Salt tea. Abomination. Tim scrunched up his nose. Thank God. John was officially not delusional. That tea did have something horribly wrong with it. He looked at Tim's expression again. Okay, it did look kind of funny. Maybe this was also why Martin had brought him this kind of tea? Not just as a lecture? Martin had even drunk it and kept a straight face. Did Martin pull his leg? A prank even? On him? John came back to himself as Tim coughed into his elbow, setting the tea down. I should not have drunk that, you are right. Hack, that is vile, Tim said. Can't believe he went all in for this of all things. Tea Revenge, title of my uni band. Incredible that you pushed him this far, actually, and even got something good out of it. Self-awareness for both men. Tim leant over and jostled John lightly. It was the kind of motion that definitely would have been that one-armed hug thing Tim favours, if John hadn't been on the other side of a wooden desk. John cleared his throat, but was surprised to feel amused more than anything else. Yes, he, told me something along the lines of telling him how to fix it, rather than just saying it was wrong. He's right, isn't he? Tim raised his eyebrows, impressed. Yes, yes, Tim, I get it. Enough. John waved a hand flippantly in Tim's direction, looking away as he recalled Martin's just too innocent expression from mere minutes ago. He was looking away, that was, until he heard a sudden intake of breath and looked over to see Tim clap his hands together. Oh no. You should get him back, Tim exclaimed. What? John said. As brilliant as dear Martha's prank was, pranks simply call for more pranks. It's the law. What? John said. Yes, exactly. I do think it's the perfect way for you to bond with him, us, your lovely assistants. Oh no, there is no way this will go well. What? John said. Bonding, John. Bonding. I'm just saving you your weeks of studying improving your workplace environment articles and books. The ticket into our hearts is right here. Come down to Earth, to our level, boss man. And it'll make you less of a shouty bastard, Tim said, grinning. There's no escaping this, is there? John sighed, for the nth time that day, and nodded. Tim cheered, loudly enough that John was sure anyone outside could hear him, but John smiled nonetheless. One thing, though, I don't want this prank to go too far, John said. I don't want any possible ideas to go too far, actually. I'm on thin ice as it is, Tim. You said it yourself. Oh, come on, John. When have I ever... Last September. Okay, uncalled for. Tim whined, before seeing the look on John's face. Don't worry, it'll be harmless. I won't go too far, we'll keep it soft. It's Martin, after all. A soft prank for a soft boy. Soft boy. John wondered, given today's experience, if Martin wasn't as soft as Tim thought. As they all thought. John only allowed this to happen because it felt like the least offensive of Tim's ideas. There was going to be no physical harm, no real lasting effect, and truth be told, even annoyance was in question. Tim had even said it was too cute to be a prank, which, though he resented the language used, had cemented it in John's mind as the right choice. The only real concern in this plan was his wallet. It was harmless, and would bring him closer to his assistants, His friends. Friends he was now trying to make. Starting with Martin. This was the mantra John repeated to himself again and again, as he drove her to the nearest toy shop and proceeded to buy around 30 different stuffed animals, as he sheepishly requested help from a store employee to load the animals into his car, as he felt the questioning gaze that seemed to permeate from the Institute stare him down as he took 3 trips to bring them all in at 5 a.m. as he stood on Martin's chair to make a stack twice his own height, as he fell off and took 5 minutes to work up the courage to get back on the chair. Regardless, John finished setting up the tower of animals at least half an hour before the scheduled start of their standard working hours, and naturally retired to his office. He'd put a good bit of effort into that stack, even if the occasional dolphin or T-Rex plush had been left at the foot of the desk. With nothing else to stave off a pervading nervousness, John set to work on some statements. Befriending assistants and realizing his faults aside, the work in the archives remained ever looming, and it wasn't going to do itself. He set aside a statement for recording, and decided to sift through his assistant's reports, with a more lenient eye than before. Though he hadn't thought much time had passed, the next thing to catch John's attention came from the assistant's area outside of his office. "What's this?" John immediately recognized Martin's voice. He sounded confused. Well, that was better than offended or upset. "Oh ho ho ho, Martin, someone's got it out for you," Tim's voice sing-songed through the walls. "Not helping, Tim." John was trying not to horribly alienate Martin more than he had already. "Got it out for me?" Martin asked, continuing to sound baffled. "Yeah, like revenge." "It's a prank, Marto," Tim said. Maybe Tim had been right to speak up, if Martin didn't get that it was a prank. This was never going to work, and Martin would not only not forgive John, he would decide the archives were simply too weird after all and just leave entirely. The sound of another person shuffling in. "Whoa, this looks more like Martin's desk when used as a kid's class dumping ground. That is a lot of stuffed animals. Sasha, that was helpful? I thought pranks were supposed to, I don't know, trick someone?" Martin said. Shit. Maybe John should be the one to leave. "They're cute, at least." There was a long moment of silence. John was dying. "Enjoying yourself there, buddy?" Normally John cursed Tim's loud voice, but at this moment he was thankful. Someone who sounded like Martin responded. "Looks comfortable enough to me. And whoever," Sasha's voice grew pointedly louder, "left these here, meant them for you, so you can do whatever you like." Ah, so John was not subtle, then. He supposed a giant tower of stuffed animals being left on someone's desk with only one person not showing up to comment on it. Well, he just hoped that Martin would find it amusing instead of threatening. John had tried to choose the cutest of the stuffed animals at the shop, but, well, he had always been biased towards cats. Despite his wishes, there had not been enough cat plushies to satisfy the amount required. So now there was a wide variety. Teddy bears, dogs, bunnies, snakes, sheep, elephants, birds, sea creatures of all sorts, cats, and most prominently, cows. John didn't have a reason for that one, besides the fact there had been more cow plushies than cats available, and they had looked cute. They reminded him of Martin, strangely enough. They were fuzzy and good to hug. That was not why they reminded him of Martin, of course. John was roused from his thoughts by a thump against his office door. Something was hitting it? He heard some muttered banter from outside, but was only more confused at a second thump against the door. He opened the door. He was hit in the face with a stuffed animal. When Martin had arrived at the archives that morning, he was fully expecting John to be waiting for him. Arms crossed, infuriatingly cute pout on his face, looking 2 minutes from falling asleep as always, and to be fired on the spot. He had not been expecting... What is this? Martin did not consider himself a yelling person. He took care to make sure that he was soft-spoken, that his height never intimidated, that he looked the farthest thing from angry or threatening. There was only so much a man could do when faced with a veritable mountain of stuffed animals. On his desk, where he had been expecting an angry John or an even angrier note. Tim and Sasha quickly filed in after Martin, who was still attempting to process what he had walked in on. He vaguely registered Tim calling it a prank, which didn't seem right, because pranks usually were kind of mean, right? You were messing up someone's space, stealing or destroying belongings, or even just making an ass out of someone. That was what Martin remembered about them, at least. So this, dozens of fuzzy little faces looking at Martin, couldn't be a prank. He said so. He didn't really register Tim or Sasha's response past their initial exclamation of surprise. He decided to turn his brain off for a bit. However, and Sasha could not be right about it being John, because that meant, well, that meant John had gone and put all these on his desk. Whoever had put them there should not have expected Martin to react any way but confused and mildly endeared by a truly ridiculous amount of stuffed and fuzzy things. Martin planted himself face down in the pile. He could be afforded a little indulgence, he thought. The next thing Martin registered was Tim's voice, saying John's name. Martin guessed a few minutes had passed. Currently, his head was buried beneath Tim and Sasha's efforts of piling the plushies around and on top of him as they tossed them around. Whoops, sorry John, didn't know you were coming out of your cave just yet, Tim said, not sounding sorry at all. Martin knew he should unearth himself, clean up his desk, scold Tim, something. But after yesterday's momentary exhilaration, several minutes of rinsing that awful tea from his mouth, and hours of regret and fear at home, Martin was a bit wiped. He had hardly slept, awaiting a stern and cold email detailing how he could forget showing up next Monday. He deserved this cuddly break. Surely, if this pile was John's work, he could forgive Martin for not clearing it just yet. He still wasn't entirely sure it was even John's work at all, but the lack of absolute tantrum meant it had to be, right? Martin waited a few moments longer before he heard John's footstep move across the assistant's office and to the break room. Martin slowly began to extricate himself from the pile, finally pulling his head out to find Tim grinning at him. So, what do you think? What do I think? Yeah, Martin, come on. You and I both know about your little prank on John yesterday. Wait, what? Martin swore if there were any more surprises today, he would have a heart attack. That might stop him from being fired immediately. Tim nodded, as if brushing Martin's words aside. Yes, yes, it was really funny, and by the way, absolutely awful tasting. Dear God, please never get mad at me, Martin. I don't think I could handle that. I wouldn't. Anyway, John and I had a little chat. No, don't look at me like that, Martin. It was fine. He wasn't even mad. He was like, what should I do now? And I said prank him back, of course. And he was a real stickler about any ideas about that, you know. It was so hard to get him to even agree. Wouldn't even let me help him put it together, the traitor. Said I would mess it up with something. Like I would fuck up the start to a glorious prank war. Martin had no idea what Tim was even saying at this point. John? Not mad? After Martin had basically gaslit him into some overly salted nonsense tea? And made some very pointed comments about John's managerial style? He had even agreed to prank him back? By use of some, what, stuffed animals? Prank war? With their Boss? Martin had been transferred to another dimension. How do you even think he got all the way up there? Tim asked, nudging Martin out of his confusion. Sorry? The stuffed animals. They're much taller than our dear John. How do you think he got them all up there? Come to think of it, if the sack extended around a foot above Martin's head, near to the ceiling, actually, must extend even further beyond John's reach. Oh, no. The image of John straining to pile all these animals on his desk was, dare he say it, endearing. And there really was no denying that it was John that did this, with all of Tim's comments and cajoling. Oh, no. That was almost cute. This couldn't be happening. Martin had just stood up for himself, was ready to accept the consequences of finally getting back at his asshole boss. There was no way that just this, just a silly prank, not even an honest apology, had flipped Martin's opinion of John. If you must know, Tim, I borrowed a chair. There's no need for the extra comments on my height, John declared, striding back into the room. Tim immediately went to join him, wrapping an arm around his shoulder and whispering something in John's ear that made the man push him away half-heartedly. Tim pinched John's cheek like an overly affectionate relative, cooing, "Oh, John, these are your first big boy steps to becoming a real person like the rest of us, putting all that effort in with your little arms and legs." John scowled. "Yes. Thank you very much for reminding me precisely why I didn't want to do this. Is it possible for you to be more patronizing?" John shook off Tim's arm and approached Martin warily. God, John didn't expect to talk to Martin now, did he? Martin didn't think he could handle that. He had just started to grapple with the concept that not only was he not fired, everything that had happened so far, the giant stack of stuffed animals particularly, was John's soft form of retaliation. Oh, John was a lot closer now. Are you... Ugh. John stopped, started, stopped, took a deep breath, and started again. Is this okay? It isn't too much? He looked up at Martin with wide eyes, fingers threaded together as if to hold them still. God, okay, so he was cute. God damn it, Martin. Come on, make a joke, scold him, say something, anything. No, it's fine. Thanks for asking, I think, Martin said. Well, I would say it's too much. I think the whole point is too much, Tim said, wandering over to lean against Martin's desk. He was not successful and almost fell down, knocking several of the toys to the floor, left grasping at the side of the desk as his knee hit the floor. Rather too much for you, maybe, John said wryly, to a dramatic gasp from Tim. I'll have you know, Tim started, launching himself upwards, knocking fully into the tower of stuffed animals and toppling it in its entirety. Good lord, John said, as all three of them were buried under the avalanche. Tim tripped into John, who tripped into Martin, and the three of them hit the floor, cushioned and surrounded by plushies. They lay tangled together for several long moments of shock. Sasha, at one point that Martin barely registered, had walked into the room, then walked directly back out. He swore he had even heard a camera click. Maybe they were rather too much, Martin said, and broke into laughter. John and Tim followed. What a picture the three of them must have made, sprawled on the floor of the archives with toys scattered everywhere. At least they were soft. It was nice, though, really nice, to feel like Martin wasn't in trouble, wasn't getting fired, was safe. Silly and safe and strangely comfortable, laying on awkwardly piled stuffed animals that John, John had left there for him. John was laying on his back, still looking a little winded, with Tim half lying over his legs and an arm thrown over Martin's stomach. He was laughing, smile wide and eyes crinkling shut, the barest wisps of crow's feet at the corners of his eyes. Was this the first time Martin had seen him really laugh? Martin had thought that John was maybe the kind of person who just didn't laugh like that. But he was evidently wrong. Maybe John just never felt comfortable enough to laugh freely. Maybe he felt pressured or anxious or any number of things that Martin could sympathize with. John hadn't even really said anything of note, done anything important, hadn't apologized, but that was fine. If John could do this, pile stuffed animals on Martin's desk as a prank, joke with them, laugh with them, they could get there. God, it felt like maybe they could become friends. Martin nudged several small plushies to the side before taking a seat on the break room couch. The archives team still hadn't found homes for the ridiculous amount of stuffed animals John had brought in, and had just started leaving them around the institute. They were cute enough, Martin supposed, and he certainly had taken more than a few back to his own place, but they were sometimes a bit of a tripping hazard. Martin pulled the helium tank and the bag of balloons towards himself. When he had brought up the idea, Tim and Sasha had looked more than pleased, and encouraged him enough that he finally went and got his hands on the damn things. He wasn't sure how much John would tolerate, even if it was a mostly harmless prank, but Tim had gone so far as to reassure Martin that if John started up again, Tim would talk to John himself. So the worst that could result from this was a cry in the bathroom about Tim defending Martin again, a price he was willing to pay. It was early in the morning, several hours before anyone should show up at the institute, and Martin had figured as long as he pushed John actually out of the archives the night before, he would have plenty of time in the morning to prepare this prank. God, convincing that man to leave the night before had been a trial. Martin considers himself somewhat stubborn, a trait he both abhors and prides himself on in turn, but John was in a league of his own. Martin had been about 5 minutes from physically shoving him out of the door. John had changed this past week or two. Of course, that wasn't nearly enough time to tell whether the change would stick, but Martin was hopeful. It wasn't like there had been a complete personality flip or anything. John still wasn't kind by any stretch of the imagination, but he had stopped yelling his criticism at Martin, had started to talk to the assistants, that even helped Martin correct something on his recent report. Martin had formatted something wrong again, used the wrong citation type or something. That wasn't the important bit. What mattered was that instead of John shouting him out of his office, he had gestured for Martin to sit down, as in, at John's desk, with him. Martin's gay little brain had made sure to note the press of their shoulders together, the low and rich tone of John's voice as he murmured his corrections gently, how small John's frame was next to his, and the fact that John smelled faintly of vanilla. Martin's rational little brain had reminded himself that this was in fact the same man who had threatened to fire him the first time they had met. Bonk. One of the balloons Martin had been filling smacked him in the face, bringing him out of his daydreaming. With a sigh, he tied the balloon off, slipped it into the hovering sack he had brought to move them in groups, and moved to dump the lot into John's office. The balloon scattered across the ceiling, and Martin grinned even as he knew the amount of work he had yet to do. John was on time. He was on time. He was not late, no matter how much he felt like he was. As his assistants had reminded him multiple times this week, 9 to 5 were normal work hours, and he should not feel guilty for not working overtime, regardless of the amount of work he had been assigned. Good lord, the amount of work he had been assigned. Boss who shall not be named, Tim's moniker, not John's, had piled even more work onto John in the last week, almost in spite of the amount that John had gotten done. The increase in productivity had come hand in hand with starting to communicate with his assistants properly, which made John feel all the more foolish about his past behavior. The team had been incredibly helpful, finishing research quicker now that they had been distributed efficiently, preventing John from burning himself out by skipping breaks, and even helping John with some of his own workload when it got to be too much. He felt guilty about that last one, but all three of them had cajoled John into accepting their help. And, well, with the access he had to do, he'd had no real choice but to accept it. Speaking of guilt, Martin's performance had improved leaps and bounds as soon as John had actually explained what he wanted. It had only taken a few short sessions of simply guiding Martin through the formatting of the reports, listening, and respecting Martin's opinions when he spoke, and suddenly Martin was no longer anywhere below the standard. John had even caught him giving corrections to Tim the other day, something about not letting his publishing background influence his official archival reports. God, he had been such an ass. He knew his motivations, keeping his assistants from the bulk of the work to protect them, among other things, were probably not inherently bad, but the result of how he had behaved? Well, he just looked like a tyrant, evidently. Bossman, Tim called as John stepped into the archives. Good morning to you as well, Tim. Anything happen? Sasha said from behind, startling John. What? You're almost on time, John. I was beginning to get worried. Sasha nudged John with a grin. Ah, so they were poking fun at him. It seemed like a side effect of this friendship was the incessant teasing. Usually Tim was the worst offender, but Sasha was not far behind. Martin's ribbing seemed mostly to come in terms of gently bullying John into taking care of himself, which ruffled his feather in an entirely different way. Just you watch. I won't leave my desk for the next 48 hours, John said. Tim leaned back in his chair, peering around his monitor. Oh, come on, don't say that. Sash was only teasing, he said. John rolled his eyes. Yes, that is exactly what I was doing, Tim. Tim jumped out of his chair as John began to pass his desk, enveloping John in a bear hug. Tim was larger than expected, and warmer, too. John had figured that Tim, being the second shortest in the archives, much to John's chagrin, would not surround him so entirely, but he should have known Tim's slightly overwhelming personality would continue into his hugs as well. He was lifted off his feet. Tim began to rock John back and forth in his arms. Ah, our little John, all grown up, making jokes. Next thing you know, he'll be leaving the nest, Sasha called out, amused, from where she had returned to her desk. Tim gave an exaggerated sob and rubbed his cheek against John's head. It was messing up John's hair. He had used some of his extra time to actually arrange it this morning, instead of his usual attitude of rushing to the Institute as soon as his alarm rang. I am, in fact, a fully grown adult, I will have you know, John said, crossing his arms over his chest as Tim ruffled his hair. At least he was back on the ground. John didn't object to physical affection on principle or anything, but he had to admit it made him as uncomfortable as it was nice. I'll believe that when I see you have lunch today, John, Martin said, coming out of the break room. And good morning, John. I hope you slept well? Yes, I did, surprisingly, said John. Martin gave him a wide grin in response, and something settled inside John, despite the teasing. Any of Tim's rounding up seemed unimportant, somehow, now that Martin had arrived. That's good to hear, Martin smiled, before walking carefully over to Sasha. John had somehow only then noticed the three cups of tea Martin was holding. John continued to watch absentmindedly as Martin and Sasha traded a few murmurs of thanks, and then as Martin walked over to join John and Tim. Here you are, Tim. No need to use John as an armrest anymore, Martin said. He's so comfy, though, Tim whined, reaching for his mug. You should try it, Martin. Feeling is believing. John watched as Martin's eyes flickered over to his shoulder, then to John's face, then back to Tim. Martin was turning pink. Tim grinned. I don't think that's necessary, huh? Martin said. One day you'll give in, my guy. I know it, Tim said, clapping a hand on Martin's shoulder before turning to sit at his desk. Sorry, I didn't make any for you yet, John. I didn't know you had come in already. Martin smiled sheepishly, holding his own steaming mug of tea. It looked warm. No, I mean, I hadn't come in until just now. It's no problem. That's kinda surprising, but good, I think. You said you slept well, so nothing went wrong otherwise, right? Right. Martin beamed. It also looked warm. Martin in general looked warm. Soft, even. That's great, John. God, next thing you know, you remember to eat by yourself, huh? Yes, yes, thank you, Martin, John grumbled. I will remind you, I am definitely a grown adult who lives by himself and everything. Martin rolled his eyes, but his smile was still on his face, so John knew they were still in decent territory. Of course, John. Whatever you say, John. I'm letting that go just this once, John said, before feeling like every nerve in his body was instantly rewired to his shoulder, the moment Martin placed a hand there and squeezed gently. Okay, perhaps that was an exaggeration, but it had definitely broken his train of thought. This happened more often, ever since he had stopped being awful, and Martin had started being more confident. John was right. Martin was warm. Martin gave a huff of laughter, the pink tint still lingering in his cheeks, and gave John an indulgent look as he said, I'll get you some tea later, yeah? Same as always? Yes, as long as same as always is not that salt monstrosity, John said, picking an old joke from the repertoire on autopilot. He'll never let you live that down, Tim called out from his desk as Martin laughed again. John definitely needed to go work. Now. Definitely. That was just a once. Though if you don't come out of there for lunch today, I may consider trying it again. Martin gestured to John's office. He would go. Any minute now. To that very same office. For work. That's a threat worse than death, John said. Martin laughed again. All right, time to go. John forced his feet to move towards his office door and sighed as he thought about the tall stacks of papers he knew were waiting in there. However, when he opened the door and tried to walk in, he was greeted by a wall of inflated mass. Many masses, in fact, pouring out. There were balloons in his office. It was like someone had decided to one-up his stuffed animal idea, as the whole room was packed to the brim with balloons, floor to ceiling, flooding further out the door as soon as he took a step back. Well, bubbled out the door and up to the assistant room ceiling. They had evidently been put there this morning, if the helium still held up. John did not want to think about the expression he had on his face right now. He even further did not want to think about what condition his hair was in right now. He could feel it, levitating. Well, static, but John was entitled to some exaggeration when portions of his hair were no longer anywhere close to his head. What? John said. Whoa! What is that, boss man? Ah, Tim. That certainly sounded like it wasn't his prank, then. Unless this was part of it? John turned around, giving way to a whole flood of balloons from his office, all of which flew up to bounce off the ceiling. Tim looked as surprised as John did, A quick look at Sasha and Martin revealed they were not nearly as surprised. Sasha? Martin? John said, baffled. Sasha grinned, and Martin rubbed the back of his neck anxiously. Don't look at me, I just wasn't surprised because I saw them through the window when I got here, Sasha said. Yeah, Martin said, gesturing weakly to the still flooding out balloons. Go wild, I guess? He's telling you your ego is inflated, Tim shouted. Thank you, Tim, John said, and at almost the same time, Martin spoke too. No, I am not telling you that, Martin said. I was just trying to play a harmless prank, or get you away from your office a bit, even. Was it too much? No, John started. How is he supposed to get into his office now? Sasha joked. How will he get to all his beloved work? Yes, yes, all right. Why are you still poking fun at me? I thought our attention was on this prank. John shook his head, looking around the room. So it was too much? Martin asks. It's fine, Marto. John wouldn't blame you for something like this, right? Was that a glint in Tim's eye? John would take the warning. Not that he needed it, for this at least. It is fine. It's nothing bad, as long as you didn't completely destroy the papers I already had in there. No, of course not. I put them in your drawers. They should be otherwise untouched, Martin said, and it seemed like a weight had been lifted from his shoulders. Nonetheless, Martin hurried to the break room, as if cowed. Was John really such a threat? Regardless, John continued to look around. Despite his desire to chat with his assistants, coming in late, not late, a voice in his mind that sounded suspiciously like Martin said, on time, actually talking with them, and the amount of work he was certain had piled up, shut that desire down quickly. He had responsibilities as head archivist, even if he didn't understand why they were his, exactly. Scissors. He needed scissors. Since it was a prank, and it had already gotten him out of his office, he reasoned that it was fine to, cut his way to his desk. It had nothing to do with the fact that popping balloons by stabbing them might also be a fun activity. What are you up to now, boss? Giving up? Tim said, watching John pace around the assistant's desks. Scissors, Tim. I need scissors. Do you think we have any in the break room? John said. Why would you need... Martin began to question, before Sasha interrupted with a smile on her face. Never mind, John. I have some here. If you're thinking what I think you're thinking, I might even join in. Sasha stood up, heading closer to John's balloon encased doorway and passing him a pair of scissors. Oh boy, do I need to see this. Give me some clears to see the boss's first step, Sash. Tim waved his hand wildly from his seat. Violence in the archives. Never thought I'd see the day. Tim wiped a tear from his eye. I threaten to pinch you every hour or so, Tim, Sasha said. Yeah, but I'm used to your violence. This is the real deal. Stabbing, Tim proclaimed, gesturing John towards the office. The stage is yours. John was not deigning that with more of a response than that deserved, which was none. He had reached his Tim drama quota for the hour. It was a term he had recently created due to actually talking with assistants more often. John had figured out that if he did something as requested, ignored Tim for enough time, or directed Tim's attention to someone else, he could be spared additional teasing or melodramatics. Though John had found himself more open to social activities than he had expected, his own social battery capacity was lacking compared to someone like Tim. Drinks could either be entertaining and even fun, or something that could exhaust him for days. And, in Tim's words, John could not afford to be more tired. In short, John was attempting a mix of option 1 and 2 of the Tim drama avoidance list, doing as requested and ignoring him. John stabbed the balloon. And missed. Well, he had felt some level of resistance, but the balloon had moved away from his scissor-wielding hand with haste. He was probably supposed to hold it still if he wanted to pop it. 2 out of 10. Weak execution and you didn't even pop it, Tim called out from behind. John sighed. Take 2, then. Hold the balloon this time, then stab it. He jabbed the sharp end of the sail-closed scissors into a squeaking blue balloon that had begun to shove its way out his office door. There was more resistance than anticipated, but it popped properly this time. He only hoped that someone wouldn't come reporting that they heard gunshots from upstairs. Noise aside, it was surprisingly satisfying to feel the give from the pop. It wasn't so hard. John could easily deal with. He looked at the wall of balloons inside of his office. No time like the present, he guessed. For God's sake, John, I wouldn't have even used balloons if I knew this would happen. How did he even get hurt on balloons? Martin mumbled, half scolding John, half to himself. John sat on the break room couch, one hand holding his other wrist. Martin knelt in front of him, rooting through a first aid kit spread open on the ground. First of all, I would like to clarify it was the scissors, not the balloons, that I got hurt with. I'm going to buy you some damn safety scissors. And secondly, what would you even replace the balloons with? What else would you even try and stuff into my office? Well, I could use your idea. Those stuffed animals? John swore he had something more to say, that he could somehow interrupt that. But he was taken aback by the comforting warmth of Martin's large hands, pressing a band-aid with antiseptic across the cut in his palm made by slightly too large scissors. Focus, John thought distantly, followed by surprisingly rough. Then once again, focus. John? Yes, Martin, the cat is very cute. Wait, what? Cat? John looked quickly at Martin. And to his hand, taking note of the bright pastel lavender smiling cat on what John had expected to be a tan-coloured bandage. Tan, because the Institute was cheap, and, well, yes, maybe John would be more surprised at this point to have proper skin-tone-coloured medical supplies when he looked in the aid kit. But John had gotten hurt that other time, so he definitely thought the Institute band-aids were... So you agree, the cat is cute. And you will take this band-aid with the love it deserves. Martin took his hands back, patting himself twice on the knees before standing up, packing away the first aid kit. I didn't know you liked cats, John, he said absent-mindedly. I have a friend from uni that has an admirable little gentleman. Brother looks a bit like this fellow, John thought, still staring at the band-aid. A bit less pink, a little more orange, actually. That's cute, Martin said, before standing stock still. I mean, the cat must be cute. John quickly flicked his gaze to Martin's face, which was turning an even deeper shade of pink than it had been when John first got to the office. Closer to red, actually. John felt a slow rise of heat in his own cheeks. Yes, he very much is. He's called the Admiral. And he's quite distinguished, I think. Distinguished, is he? Martin laughed, and John couldn't stop himself from joining in. He is! Don't laugh, John protested, still fighting his own chuckles. John, please, you do have pictures, right? I'd really like to see a distinguished gentleman of a cat, Martin said. The standards are high. He needs at least a bow tie. John scoured his mind for a breed of cat with a bow tie. Not that the Admiral had one, of course. He was distinguished on his own. Can we compromise if he's a tuxedo cat? This was probably the most John had laughed in a while. Really? I think I could count him if he really is. Martin looks nice when he's laughing, John thought. Not uncomfortably flushed like earlier. No, sorry, he's orange. Does that count? That's nowhere close to tuxedo for a cat. That's out. Oh. Are you against orange suits, Martin? Martin laughed. Oh, no. John, you gotta let me help with this next one, Tim whispered randomly to John on a Thursday afternoon, when John was certainly not struggling with ideas of how to get closer to Martin or how to get away from Martin. The pranks made Martin laugh, both times. Why should I? John asked. Because I've already got a good idea. Sasha too, after she let the prank play out last time, Tim said. Timothy Jemothy Stoker, Sasha yelled. Shouted. Projected as far as she could. That is my desk. With my computer. Why, Sasha, you and your desk look great as ever, Tim said jovially, walking away from the archives as fast as possible. Immediately past Sasha's and Martin's desks. Wrapped entirely with cling film that looked so opaque it must have been at least 5 layers. Hard to cut and scissors had been banned from the archives last week and now sat in Martin's personal drawer. Made inaccessible by cling film. Martin and John, plastered against the back wall of the assistant's area, looked at each other. Martin bumped John's upper arm with his elbow. He was holding his laptop protectively to his chest, having brought it in his messenger bag, paired from the cling film. You think we can get her to go after Tim and she'll let us go? Martin whispered to John, far less upset about his own unusable desk than Sasha appeared to be. I say on the count of three we make a break for the hallway. Leave the Institute, John whispered back. When they ran off, laughing, and came back 2 hours after their allotted lunchtime, Tim, Sasha, and Rosie raised their eyebrows. Oh, Sasha, real mature, real original, putting tape underneath my mouse. So smart, so unpredictable, so hard to get rid of, so hard to deal with, Tim said, rolling back in his chair and waving the offending mouse at Sasha. Sasha didn't even look. Tim, some of us have no need to dip into being a child and occupy ourselves for longer than it takes to get in a quick reminder for an apology. You're pulling some disdain there, Sash. Sasha looked at Tim, who groaned like a man being shot. Don't hit me with that John look. John walked past them, paused by Martin's desk, and they exchanged a quick look before John continued on his way. No, John. Martin. John, I can understand, but even you? Martin, you're giving me the John look. Tim began to slide out of his chair. I'm melting. You're killing me. Are you saying you can get melted by a glare? You're weaker than a wicked witch? What's that? Tim asked, completely interrupting his rant to Martin, and largely the room. Something wrong? It's... No, never mind. Saw something weird. It's... No, it's there again! Tim shouted. What is? The picture... The picture? It's just one of us at the bar. The first one we convinced John to go to. Yeah, but there was a difference. Huh. Didn't see it. Watch with me, Tim said. What, again? Trust me on this. You'll see it if you just... There! See! Huh. Where's the... Oh, maybe there was something different. Yes! Yes! Look, I swear it's this, like, mustache on my face. Obviously edited, it's there for like 10 seconds, but it's enough that I remember it so clearly. It's not even a red shade of brown that I have. I'll have you know, the janky archive lighting and shitty graphics here is what made it look so off. This is not my first time suffering Photoshop woes, Sasha said derisively, hiding her smug grin. Sasha, Tim said, with such an exaggerated look of betrayal, everyone else in the room couldn't stop giggling for at least 5 minutes. How did he even do this? Tim cried out. I don't know what you're talking about, Sasha said. Isn't this too far for a prank? What prank? I didn't wrap anyone's desk in impenetrable cling film. Was it really that impenetrable? John asked Martin, standing away from the other two. I mean, it did take several hours to remove, I guess. You guys really added a lot of layers, Martin said. John edged closer to Martin, making sure the other two couldn't hear him. If I'm being honest, I was the one who did Sasha's desk. Tim just told me to wrap it really well. Martin gasped. How dare you? Should I go tell? John reached as far up as he could, straining to clap a hand over Martin's mouth as he laughed. Nope, no, no, thank you. You are now sworn to secrecy. Martin mimed locking his mouth and throwing away the key when John let go. The two of them looked back over to Tim and Sasha, still arguing with their backs turned to each other. I'm sorry. Is that what you wanted to hear? Tim said, staring blankly at his monitor. That's nice to hear, but I still don't know what you're talking about, Sasha replied, refusing to turn away from her desk. Sasha, I'm begging you, please turn it off. It never leaves my mind. The horrid size of the thing. A monstrosity. And the worst of it? The color distortion, Tim begged, kneeling dramatically in front of Sasha's desk. It was like he was praying to a weird altar. Please free me. Only you can do it. I literally don't know how. Hasn't it been enough? The torment? Repeat after me. I will never mess with Sasha's belongings again, Sasha said. I will never mess with Sasha's belongings again, Tim said. I will never play dangerous pranks in the archives again, Sasha said. Dangerous? Martin asked John, having wheeled his chair over to the open door of John's office. They were both drinking tea, casually huddled together with their chairs. I think she means dangerous for her computer, John whispered back, alternating between looking at Tim gripping Sasha's ankles and being shaken off, and smiling softly at Martin. It made his eyes crinkle and tears drop off his face. Martin was blushing again. I will never mess with Sasha again. Martin looked doubtfully at John, catching the other's eyes. It's not even her personal computer, right? We're all using the Institute's crappy employee computers, right? John started, struggling to hold Martin's gaze for some reason. I'm not sure it matters to her, he said. I will only include Martin and John as enemies in this prank war, Sasha finished, and Tim quickly repeated. That sounds bad, Martin said distantly. He hadn't turned back to look at Tim and Sasha. John's eyes had an interesting color to them, and somewhat hidden in shadow like they were, they looked dark. Deep. Oh, wait, no, that actually does, said John, turning and getting up from his chair, geared up to argue himself out and then into the prank war again with Tim and Sasha. Strangely, he seemed to glance back at Martin for a moment before giving in to Tim and Sasha's excuses. Martin hoped that John wasn't feeling too pressured. He seemed to be giving in really easily lately. Why was that? Martin wondered. What had that look been about? Tim, Sasha. Not again, John bemoaned, staring blankly at his office door, which was covered in something. Hopefully it wasn't paint, but just colored paper. If it wasn't at worst some kind of peel-off tape, John would be declaring an end to this prank war. John looked across the room to Martin, who looked up from having gazed at this evidently painted-over mug. He hadn't been making tea, just mourning the loss of his favorite mug. Martin had liked the picture of the Highland cow, and Tim or Sasha had evidently crudely attempted to mimic it in paint, over the original picture. Martin looked torn between fond amusement and troubled sadness as he gazed at the mug. John wasn't feeling nearly as kind, but he swore to get Martin a set of antique hand-painted mugs with those cow pictures on it. John knew just the website. He'd bought the cat version to share with Georgie. Tim and Sasha, on the other hand, were about to receive a week's worth of exclusively fieldwork requirement statements to research. John would be politely picking the most boring ones. Tim and Sasha had ceased openly belittling John and turned to murmuring to each other or mouthing "talk to him" across to John, as loudly as one could mouth anything. John shook his head. Jonathan Sims, my beloved boss. I don't like that. My best bro, my friend of friends, heart of hearts, John, Johnny, Jonathan. Please do not tell me there is a bug in there. Nope, nope, there is not a live bug in there. Those are not in the archives. No, Tim said, beginning to chant no, no, no over and over as he creeped a hand to open the drawer. I won't tell you, then, John said. Martin grinned. Don't try and hide my tea away, then. Why don't you, Tim? That's not just unfair to me, it's unfair to all of you. None of you get any tea either, Martin said primly. Cruel and unusual punishment, John nodded. You two are a menace, Sasha said, holding a piece of paper very carefully beneath an overturned cup. I couldn't touch it, Martin had to do it, John said. Braver than any US Marine, Tim sighed, and began to pretend to weep. We aren't even American, Martin said, laughing. John smiled at Martin, losing track of Tim's position and finding himself with a bug being flung at him. This was becoming a problem. Hey, John. Notice anything new about your emails lately? Sasha said. Excuse me? John said. Sorry, refer to him by his proper title. You're talking to Mr. Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London, there, Sasha, Tim said, walking over to Sasha's desk to join her and place an elbow on her shoulder where she was sitting. Oh, Tim, you're right. So, Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute, London. Have you noticed anything different about your emails lately? Sasha replied, raising a hand to her mouth to feign a fake remorseful look. That was you guys? Martin exclaimed. How did you even get to our computer settings like that? Well, senior T-boy and top cuddliest employee of the Magnus Institute London, if you had paid attention to if you were leaving your laptop open when you left for lunch breaks, which constitutes a gross violation of the Institute data privacy policy, by the way, with Jonathan Sims, head archivist of the Magnus Institute London here, Tim said. Hey, both John and Martin said, flushing. Oh, and hacking, Sasha finished. Tim nodded vigorously. Can you change it back? John asked timidly. Only you can change it back, my young Padawan, Tim said, patting John on the head like a child. When you can navigate to the autocorrect settings on your computer. I can navigate a laptop, John said. How can you call me young Padawan and then make fun of me for being unable to use technology like an elderly person? Pick one insult and stick with it. Those two things can coexist, Tim said. And then, at the look on John's face, don't think about it. Martin sighed, and both Tim and John turned to look back at him and Sasha. John, I'll show you how, later. It's more of a question of how to keep Sasha from hacking our computers again. How do you value your own computer so much and then completely mess with ours? Not to mention the Institute data privacy policy, John pointed out. Sasha looked a little sheepish, but faked scolding. Do not bring up the cling film incident. I didn't say it. You did. I thought you said no more bombs, Tim exclaimed. No, if I remember, you said you would give me one chance to do anything back to you after your harmless stink bomb made the Admiral avoid me for a fortnight, John said. And then we decided to ban any prank bombs. This one's glitter, Martin said cheerfully, looking specifically at Sasha's hair. He was possibly still upset about her attempt last week to send a prank email to his mother. I have a date later this week, Tim shouted. Just tell them it's your sparkling personality, John said. Tim looked wounded. Martin and John stared down the now purple-coloured Tim and Sasha, covered in glitter that was partly winking beneath the harsh archive lights. Well, they used to be harsher, but the one near the hallway had been flickering for the past week. As annoying as it had been so far, it now made the glitter flash like an exploded disco ball. Tim, who was apparently trying to rub more of the coloured powder and glitter onto the arms of his already ruined outfit, took a step to watch John and Martin. Tim bolted. We can have a rave in the archive! All of us! He rushed as he rushed to tackle the two of them in a hug. Sorry, Tim. I think I like your shine, Martin said, dodging the hug and running up the stairs with John at his heels. Good one, John panted. They both grinned and had to leave work early to go shower and change. Tim was shaking John by the shoulders. John, come on, you can't tell me that you know that new song from TikTok, he said. John, you have to tell me if you are whistling a meme song. I need this answer. I demand it as a friend privilege. What are you talking about, Tim? Isn't this just the opening to that opera show that they did a documentary about recently? John, no, you can't do this. It featured that composer that specialized in unconventional instruments at the orchestra and opera. John, please, it's going to be stuck in my head all week, Tim pleaded. And you won't even tell me that you know memes. Sorry, Tim, I think it's your lot on that one. John doesn't know memes, Martin said, walking by holding a stack of boxes. Tim stopped shaking John and whipped around, pointing an accusatory finger at Martin. Accomplices! You two are in cahoots, a partnership we didn't know about. Martin's cheeks reddened slightly as he said, and what can you do about it? Oh ho ho, getting cocky now, Tim said, indignant. We've gotten 3 pranks on you and Sasha without you two having retaliated even once. I would say we're entitled to some arrogance, John said, dusting Tim's grip off. Are you and Sasha slowing down? Running out of ideas, maybe? Martin came around to rub at John's shoulder for him, as if massaging out a bit of tension. John leaned back into him, looking smug. Not a chance, Tim said. Just you wait. Wait and see. We'll be waiting, then, John grinned. Okay, so a proposal. Just like a closet. Lock him in, Tim suggested, hands on both knees. That feels a little cruel. And a little obvious, Sasha said. The two of them were sitting on some crates left in one of the deep stacks of the archives, gesturing to two pieces of paper, one each, in their hands. One was labeled Ideas. Replace all pen/pen holders with flowers and vases. Paint John's desk. Banned. Plaster the archive walls with posters of my face. Get tape that doesn't damage the wall. Swap the biscuits in the break room with something else. Martin might kill me. And the other was a printed out spreadsheet with ideas. Pros, cons, expected retaliation, and a goal reached column, the last of which was colored red. Something a little bigger than a closet, then? Like a room? Tim said. I mean, I guess. At this point, we've tried almost everything that I can think of. I even tried to do a romance-themed prank on Valentine's Day. Sasha threw up her hands, still holding the spreadsheet. Oh, really? Sweet, then we can just say, document storage? Take them there or direct them there for some reason or other and then lock them in together? Yeah, how long do you think they'll take to confess? I mean, knowing them, a whole night. Tim wiggled his eyebrows and then shrugged. Honestly, probably just a few hours? Let's say, like, until the day ends. Martin would get really mad if we let John stay past work hours again for a prank, Sasha said, rolling her eyes. I mean, you did give John a fake assignment from Elias filled with all that threatening shit he likes to write about donors and responsibilities of a department head and so on and so forth. You know he's still hung up on that sometimes. Yeah, I know. I did feel bad about that one. Even lied to Elias later and said I had been occupying John's time on a report I was stuck on to make up for it. Oh man, I remember that. I tried to convince Elias John and Martin were in their honeymoon period and couldn't pay attention to anything else. Like, I think I literally implied they were married or something. So you are why they're still mad? Nah, that's just a repression. Who? John or Martin? Yes. Sasha sighed. Okay, let's lock them in document storage. Let us out, you two, Martin said, banging at the door. I don't know who you're talking to, Tim said, obviously plugging his nose to sound more nasally. I'm an assistant in the research department. Tim, research is on the other side of the institute. We're the only ones on this half of the basement, and no one wants to come down here near artifact storage, John said, shuffling around at the back of the room. Martin thought he also sounded strangely out of breath. If you don't let us out before, Martin said. Yes, we know. You have to walk John home at 5 p.m. sharp. We get it. Sasha recited back, sounding bored. No, he needs to rest. None of us should be working overtime. Martin turned away from the door, flushing, and decided to figure out what John was messing with. Okay, he's got a point. It's not like the Institute gives us paid overtime, Tim said from beyond the still-locked door. I was trying to make fun of their dates, Sasha said. No, yeah, I get that. But why doesn't the Institute pay overtime? Didn't we do a lot of overtime on research? Tim, that's not the focus here. No, but see... Are you doing okay back here, John? What are you doing? Looking for trapdoors? Martin asks quietly, and moved closer to the back of the room with John. No, good one. Thought I had something? For... Well, never mind, John replied, turning and moving to the door. The two of them met halfway, actually running into each other. John slammed fully into Martin. He took a step back, and then, seeing John was unsteady from the collision, reached out to grab him by the arm and waist. To stop John from toppling over, Martin simply pulled him fully into his own chest. They stared at each other for a long moment. Martin noted how light John was, the length of his hands resting near Martin's shoulders, and the different way John had styled his hair that morning. There was a small braid woven into his usual bun. It looked cute, that thread of something woven and complicated in between the straight, neatly pinned rest of his hair. Great. Now Martin's brain was in poetry mode. John had always looked nice, even when he was in his, now fondly termed, double boss mode. John had nearly thrown a fit when he heard his more rude behavior had Tim likening him to Elias, and sworn off ever behaving like that again. He had been a lot more uptight, of course, but Martin didn't say he hadn't been presentable like that. It had been a bit cute, the tightly pulled hairstyle, all neat and proper and respectable, but with paperclips stuck throughout, the professionally creased trousers, but a sheaf of paper sticking out of his back pocket. John had seemed simultaneously neat and clumsy in some ways. And, well, paired with those cheekbones? He ranked objectively higher than most of Martin's crushes. It didn't compare to how John looked nowadays, though. He changed drastically ever since realizing what he was doing to the team. If Martin had thought John's stern look and persistent pout had been cute, John smiling and laughing with him had blown that thought out of the water. John loosening up, laughing, all flushed at the pub, triumphantly calling out the right piece of trivia during a quiz, all nestled up against Martin's arm on a few occasions John either needed an escape from Tim and Sasha or was too tired to pay attention to how close he was getting, had made Martin fall, and fall hard. His childish crush had matured into something deeper and more genuine. John had turned out to also be a genuinely decent person to talk to. Stubborn as all hell, of course, but ruthlessly intelligent, with a deadpan but endearing sense of humour, and surprisingly understanding of Martin's circumstances. Hell, John had found his performance in the archives impressive when he found out about Martin's CV. Some secret that had been. Sasha had known from the beginning, Tim had found out shortly after, and John has known for the past few months now. Martin thought it was likely that even Elias knew. It was a miracle he hadn't been fired yet. Then there had been that time John had found Martin after finishing a call with his mum. And, well, Martin had never thought John would drop his work willingly, but he'd not even hesitated in an attempt to comfort him. Only Martin's insistence on being fine had kept John from abandoning his work and bringing him all the way back to his flat. In short, John was being nicer. Was objectively nice. To Martin especially. That had been the final nail in the coffin, probably. Martin had been done for. "We'll come back later," Tim called out from behind the door. "You'll come back now and open the door," John ordered. "No can do, sir. My boss tells me I've got work to do." "I am your boss. And you gave me work this morning, so we'll be back before you have to go home, John," Sasha said. "At the latest." "That is hours from now," John shouted. "Hours in here?" Martin asked. "We don't even get water?" There was a pause, some murmuring behind the door. "Okay, yeah, fair. Hold on," Tim said, and the door opened. Two bottles of water and two packs of biscuits were tossed in. Martin knew they had taken from his personal stash in the cupboard of the break room. The door shut. "You just had lunch. This should be enough," Sasha said. "We can't even leave to go to the bathroom?" John asked. "Drink responsibly, kids," Tim replied, a laugh audible in his voice. "We'll be back in a few, okay? It won't be too long," Sasha said. "Make sure to talk to each other." "Yeah, play nice. I don't want to have tossed Martin in there as a sacrifice to our lord and leader, head archivist," Tim joked. John and Martin heard two sets of footsteps slowly fade away from the door. Turning away, John walked briskly to one of the walls and sat down with his arms and legs crossed in a huff. He looked a little like one of those birds puffing themselves up. It certainly didn't help when he ran a hand roughly through his hair. I hope Tim won't be right. I'm sorry, Martin. I didn't want them to do this, John said. What? I didn't think you wanted them to prank us. What are you talking about? I didn't discourage them enough. I should have pushed harder so you wouldn't be made uncomfortable, but I was... John stopped himself. I'm sorry. John, you were what? I didn't want you to be uncomfortable. I'll talk to them about this afterwards, I swear. I'm not uncomfortable. It's fine. What were you about to say? John looked apprehensive, but spoke anyway. I was enjoying myself. I thought it was fun. Oh god, John was apologizing because he was having fun with the prank war? That was childishly cute. He wasn't doing anything wrong at all. After all of them had been having fun with the prank war. You having fun is a good thing. It doesn't mean we have to stop. Martin came to sit next to John against the wall. But it's fine. It's just another one of Tim and Sasha's pranks. It'll last a few hours and we'll get out and plan our revenge. Martin tried to sound encouraging. I'm sure you don't... You heard what Tim said. You're a sacrifice. That was just a joke. It's no sacrifice for me to be here, you know? We were both forced into this equally by them. Why do you think it's your fault? John. I treated you awfully, Martin. I was a horrible boss. Never listened. Constantly berated you. I wouldn't have disagreed if you wanted to quit. Encouraged it, even. Really? You were skilled and learned fast. I just expected you to be something you're not. You've always been a lot more capable than I gave you credit for. And I still give you credit for. I'm sorry. John was staring at his own knees, arms wrapped around them and folding himself into a ball, as though trying to make himself as small as possible. Martin put a hand on John's arm to catch his attention. Despite Martin already beginning to feel stuffy in the small room, John was somewhat cold and tense at his touch before relaxing. That second reaction made something squeeze in Martin's chest. I won't say it was okay, but you're more than making up for it. It's perfectly all right now, Martin said, giving John's arm a small squeeze. And anyway, Martin let go, giving a small huff of laughter. I did lie on my CV, so you weren't entirely wrong. No, I was. Even with the lie, it's more incredible you lasted as long as you did. God knows I had no idea what I was doing, despite my qualifications and all. I still don't know what I'm doing, as you can see. John waved his hand around the room, but looked back at Martin at the end. John's eyes sure were dark. The sort that sucked you into them, that seemed to swirl mesmerizingly. I was so nervous about living up to expectations when I first got promoted, and I thought you were going to be another person there to judge me, so I took it out on you. That was wrong, and I'm sorry. Dark but gentle. Elias practically forced this position on me. He sweet-talked me into thinking that because of my sudden promotion, others would be keeping tabs on me, grading me or something, like they'd be waiting for me to slip up. I'm not trying to make excuses, Martin. It was wrong, but I guess I'm just venting? Warm. Earnest. Honestly, I'm just as bad as you are in terms of qualification for this job. I came in as a researcher, and I know nothing about library sciences. You have more relevant experience for this job than I do. It made me nervous that there was someone qualified that I didn't know who would be watching me, expecting something from me. So I pushed you all away, even though none of you deserved it. Especially not you. John shifted out of his curled ball to face Martin head-on, rubbing his hands to the ground and said. One of his knees was nearly touching Martin's. I couldn't see who was helping me right in front of me, because I was so focused on what people thought I should be doing, John huffed. Lawyer certainly implied I was doing something wrong. He looked back up to Martin, sheepishly. Not that I'm blaming what I said and did on him, but, well, if you're to be believed, we all hate him, right? Right, Martin said, trying not to stare at where John's hand on the ground was brushing his. I was too caught up in myself to notice how much you were all trying to help, and I want to have been trying more to talk to you. To all of you. I never realized how much work you put into helping me, although Sam, you were just trying to figure out what you had done wrong. How much tea you'd wasted on me. I never recognized just how hard-working, considerate, attentive, stubborn, and intelligent you really are. John's rueful expression shifted to a sly grin. Never knew how much of a grudge you could hold until I drank that tea. Martin hadn't been expecting this. This was a flood of compliments Martin wasn't sure how to accept, along with a very John apology. It was certainly something he had never expected to hear. Martin knew, to some degree, that John regretted how he had been acting towards the assistants, had even heard him apologize to Tim and Sasha at some point. But Martin had just assumed he wouldn't get one, had assumed he wasn't close enough to John, to Tim and Sasha, to the group, hadn't worked in research like they had, didn't have enough of a camaraderie. Maybe he thought that John just hanging out with Martin, caving in to requests to go to lunch with him, spending time talking after explaining a statement to Martin, was his apology. Martin laughed. I think I was just at the end of my patience. Certainly not a good quality, though maybe if it led to this prank war, it was worth it. It has definitely gone farther than I expected. But I'd still say it's a positive experience. If you think it is, at least. John laughed along. I think we're all running out of ideas, though. Locking us in a room? That's not a prank. That's just a time act. Huh. Yeah. Like we're kids. I guess we really are running out of ideas. Martin wasn't sure he liked that thought. They had grown closer, all of them, Martin included. If this stopped, it meant no more secret planning meetings with John, no more laughing over Tim and Sasha, no more suffering through their retaliatory pranks together. John, Tim and Sasha could close off again, return to being just their friendship circle. And Martin would be there, he guessed. He couldn't leave the archives or anything, but there would at least be somewhat friendly co-workers from then on. Co-workers. Martin, are you okay? John asked, squeezing the hand on Martin's knee. When had that gotten there? Yeah, I'm fine, Martin said. There was a pause, as if John expected something else. He was fine, though. John didn't need his weird, lonely worries about being excluded from the closest thing he'd had to good friends in years. I know I'm not great at advice or comforting. But if you ever wanted an ear, John started. John can't be this sweet now, Martin thought. I won't be able to keep quiet. John looked at Martin, wide-eyed and earnest. Oh well. This prank will end soon and you three will go back to being friends, and I doubt I'm allowed into that, Martin said in one breath, looking away from John. I don't think you're going back to whatever we had previously. Like, I know you've changed. I don't think you're lying or anything. I don't think you think I'm lying. I just also think that maybe part of why we're getting along so well is we have a proper goal and motivation to hang out together, and after that is gone and we can't plan together anymore or theorize what's going to hit us next or get together after a day of pranks and go to drinks to talk about it, I just... Martin. I know that's none of my business if you three want to do things without me. You're allowed to do that, of course, but I'm worried that I won't be able to go back to not talking to you guys as much, not just being annoying... Martin. John had squeezed Martin's knee again, and his other hand was covering the one Martin had propped up on the ground. He was close, close enough that Martin could see the nick on the frame of John's glasses. It was small, rather than a proper crack in the full frame, like a tiny piece of plastic had been chipped off by something. John would be the kind of person to accidentally hit his glasses on something, wouldn't he? That thought probably shouldn't have brought a wave of fondness with it. But Martin was resigned to being a lost cause at this point. Martin, John was saying, I'm your boss. Oh, of course. How had he forgotten? They weren't supposed to be any more than just co-workers. They weren't allowed to. John was literally his boss. He was the one in charge, and being friends obviously messed up the role that John had just been saying he'd been made responsible for. And Martin was being stupid again. Martin hoped John wouldn't go back to berating him, at least. And he really did think John wouldn't do that again, but he would be distant. Professional. He sort of wished he hadn't even pranked John to begin with. At least he wouldn't have hurt as much if he didn't know the extent of what he was losing. Martin, listen to me. John was still talking. Martin should probably at least acknowledge it. He gritted his teeth and scrunched up his hand beneath John's. He wouldn't take it away yet. Martin was a coward and would hold on to what little affection he could get. Yes, John, I know. After we get out and you stop the pranks, we'll go back to being... No, John said vehemently. No, Martin, please, just listen. I am your boss, I know. But that doesn't mean I'm not your friend. What? We're all friends, Martin. Of course we are. We love you, Martin. You're fantastic to talk to and hang out with, regardless of whether or not it has to do with the pranks or anything else. The end of that, or this, or whatever it is, doesn't mean anything. It's just part of why we're friends. It won't... Well, I can't say things won't change. But that doesn't mean they can't change for the better. Who knows? Maybe we'll finally stop having to replace mugs and pens so often. We won't stop working together. We won't stop hanging out together. And we certainly won't stop talking to each other. We'll just find something else. We can meet more on weekends. I can try going out for drinks more often. Oh God, I might be crying. You'd have to leave your office on time first. Practice having a proper work-life balance. Martin laughed through his sniffling. I take offense to that, you know, John said, but his voice entirely lacked bite and he was smiling, holding onto Martin's hand underneath his. I took a break today. A break, but John didn't leave his office until Martin had come to get him for lunch. And then after that, they were shoved in here. Do you mean lunch? John, lunch isn't a break. It's something we need to have to survive, Martin said. Well, I don't want to hear it. Martin, no longer a stance, decided to adjust his position, leaning more of his weight against the wall and turning his hand over to hold John's. I'll get you to take properly if I have to carry you outside myself. John's hand squeezed his. John's hand was still cold, but fit comfortably into his own. "That might be nice," John replied absentmindedly. Martin and John looked at each other and blushed. "John, please, just tell me what you're looking for?" Martin asked, glaring over at the shelf John was peeking behind. "I've got it, Martin, don't worry, it's just one of..." John shouted with his back still turned, attention focused on prying the shelf away from the wall. "Found it."
"Found what?"
"The cot."
"The cot?"
To Martin's great surprise, he watched John's effort of pulling a rickety and bent frame with a squished mattress from out from behind the shelf. John repeatedly yanked at the metal frame, but quickly realized that he hadn't pulled the shelf far enough back. He was about to grasp the shelf again when Martin reached an arm above him and moved the shelf back easily.
"Ah, thank you," John said, distantly trying to estimate how heavy that shelf with its metal drawers and frame must be, not to mention with the endless amount of paper stacked within them.
Martin's jumper bunched around his shoulder and twisted to reveal the swell of his arm.
"Do you want me to take the cot out for you?"
Martin asked, a fond but amused undercurrent in his voice as he waited for several long moments after moving the shelf and stepping back again.
"No!" John yelped, wrenched from his distraction, and quickly yanked the cot the rest of the way out. It was still folded, though, and when trying to set it up, John found himself practically wedged against the wall by the very frame he had pulled down. In trying to stop the thing falling onto him, he had slipped between it and the wall. Martin gave a grin and reached over to pull the creaking metal back and apart. When Martin had straightened the awkward legs of the table, John dove into the tiny space between the shelf and the wall to retrieve a pile of sheets and blankets, with two tiny pillows. John flitted around the cot, arranging the sheets and the two pillows. Martin watched fondly as John desperately grasped at it, trying to keep one corner of the fitted sheet from flipping up, while pulling the opposite corner over the mattress's edge. He was still waving away Martin's help. After a short while, John stood up and presented the arrangement of the cot like he was showcasing a new car. Martin laughed and sat down carefully, not wanting to jostle John's neat arrangement. John himself plopped down next to him, almost bouncing back off the cot. Martin turned to look at John accusingly.
"So, why do you have a cot in here, Mr. I Take Breaks?"
"Would you believe me if I said it was a coincidence?"
"This is a place to take breaks."
"Please tell me you don't mean sleep."
Martin laid back on the cot, throwing an arm over his eyes as if exasperated. He looked more comfortable than John had ever seen him, rivaling how he'd looked at one time John and the others had gone to play games at Martin's house, and he'd gotten to see Martin laughing hard enough he had to clutch his gut with the force of it. Like this, Martin was softly smiling, even as he feigned disappointment in John. Head rolled slightly to the side where John could still see the slightest hint of the laugh lines at the corner of his eyes. He looked relaxed.
"I won't tell you I mean sleep, then," John said, deciding to lay back as well, so he could face Martin.
Martin removed the arm from over his eyes to face John and met his gaze.
"You do know you actually should take care of yourself more, right?"
"Of course. As my parents were in misdeed, I'm magically bound to listen to your every command," John said with a roll of his eyes. It was honestly just a part of his life at this point, forgetting to eat and losing sleep because of work. It had been the same for him from secondary to university, and at this point changing his habits seemed like more effort than dealing with the side effects.
"John," Martin said, and wasn't that just a more serious tone of voice than John's joke deserved? He wondered if it hadn't sounded enough like a joke. He thought he knew Martin's sense of humor better at this point, but it seemed like he had a ways to go.
"Hey, I didn't mean... I meant it. I want you to take better care of yourself. When seeing someone you like, someone you're close to, suffer simply because they're on some driven mission, it hurts. It's like you're valuing yourself based on what you can contribute to work, rather than to, I don't know, our friendship and personal lives. And none of us want to see you like that. It hurts us too when you hurt yourself like this. Martin was looking directly into John's eyes. Martin, it was just a joke. I'm not really trapped under any command. It's just part of my life. John tried to avoid Martin's eyes, turning away a bit. Martin grabbed John's face in his hands and guided John gently to look back at him. He looked incredibly earnest, and the smile had been replaced by a deeply concerned look. Warm, John's totally untrustworthy brain offered. You'd think his brain was tired of repeating the same lust-struck thought every time Martin touched him, but no. Trust me, you don't need to work yourself into an early grave as some sort of quest for forgiveness. You're earning our forgiveness with everything else you do. Coming out to drinks, eating lunch with us, having game nights. Even just talking to us is helping. We've all forgiven you. Hell, we all love you, John. John flushed and twitched in Martin's hold. You said you want to get closer to us, right? Martin smiled, relaxing again. And listen to me on this. We want you to be nice and healthy, and not irritated and exhausted, alright? We want you just to hang out with us, and trust us, not to bury yourself in papers because Elias has given you another 3 decades worth of statements to root through in a week. I don't want to have to nurse you back to life in the break room. Martin has always been concerned like this for John, hadn't he? When John was being an arse, just the absolute worst, Martin had still asked him to take breaks, to eat lunch, had brought him tea. Barring the incident, of course. He had tried to lend John his jacket once, when John had been shivering when the heating had been off that 1 week, and John had waved him away because he thought Martin was trying to belittle him, or something. Everything had seemed like a slight at John's competence, and the kind gestures had flown over his head. Martin had always been kind to him, even when John hadn't deserved it. Martin was also a whole host of other traits that John had mentioned earlier, most prominently stubborn, and one he didn't mention, which was pretty. Martin's eyes had a glint in them that made John's heart sing, broad shoulders and hands that made his heart jump, and perfectly curled hair that made his heart yearn to touch. Martin's soft face and surprisingly callous hands, his cute patterned sweaters, and the way his jaw set when he determined he wasn't going to back down in a discussion. Not to mention things that went beyond his looks, like Martin's strength, or his surprising mind for languages, or how overwhelmingly considerate he was. John swore the man had a sixth sense for when someone else was feeling under the weather. John knew that Martin had a separate first aid kit and pain relievers of all kinds stored in a drawer in his desk. Martin always knew when to offer comfort and when to be quiet when John was overwhelmed or exhausted. John lifted a hand to hold Martin's palm against his face. I like when you take care of me, he said softly, looking into Martin's eyes. Martin flushed immediately. I like to take care of you. He brushed off some beneath John's eye with a feather-light touch. I just worry, still. John turned his head to brush his lips over the scent of Martin's palm, still looking him in the eyes. He heard Martin's breath hitch and squeezed his hand. I worry about you too, John whispered, barely loud enough for Martin to hear. Is this okay? Yes, Martin said, breathlessly, drawing closer to meet John in the middle. John felt the huff of Martin's breath before their lips met, and then the gentle pressure of them meeting. Softly, a crucial scent of warm contact. John shuddered, focus shifting to every nerve of his body where they touched. Martin's hands on his face, his knee brushing Martin's thigh, their lips pressing together. They hardly lingered before their glasses clinked together, and they removed them with an awkward chuckle. John was still holding Martin's hand, and he gripped it a little tighter as he closed his eyes and moved into another kiss. He felt the whisper of Martin's bottom lip against his own, and pressed harder in response. He shifted, releasing Martin's hand to rest it behind the man's neck, playing with the hair at his nape. There was something deeply satisfying about being the person to mess up Martin's curls. He punched them in his hand, and felt Martin twitch as he tried to pull them together again. John let out a growl of frustration when he realized he wasn't capable of actually pulling Martin across the cots. Martin let out a soft huff of laughter and shuffled closer to John, shifting one hand to hold him at the waist. John, in turn, sunk into Martin, soft warmth surrounding his whole body. Like sinking into a warm bath after a grueling day. All his stress melted away like butter in a pan, leaking out through his limbs. He stopped thinking about work, stopped thinking about the archives, about his worries, and simply slid up the cot to rest his forehead on Martin's. He paused, savoring just breathing together for a moment, before nuzzling Martin's nose and dipping for another kiss. He felt the curve of Martin's smile against his own, making it all the sweeter. Everything else faded away. When John brought his brain back online, some undefined time later, the two of them lay together, just far enough apart to see the other's face. John shivered as he felt Martin brush a hand down his spine. He let out a sigh of contentment, and relaxed into the mattress, taking in how Martin looked. Martin's eyes were half-lidded, and a pink flush filled his cheeks. His lips were reddened, a little swollen, and something in John's mind jumped as if to say, "I did that." The look on his face sent John's heart into double time, a smile filled with overwhelming fondness and eyes so gentle John felt like some sort of fragile animal, small-boned and being wrapped in affection. Usually that thought would make John bristle, and perhaps if the look had any pity in it, he would have gotten defensive, but as it was, he couldn't muster more than a fond look of his own. When he'd looked his fill, John moved closer again to settle into Martin's arms. "I want to take care of you too," John said. "You deserve to be taken care of." "Huh, yeah," Martin said, muffling his response into John's hair. "I'm serious," John said into Martin's collarbone. "You should," too demanding. "I would like for you to feel comfortable enough to tell me when something's wrong. Share your worries." "They're really not that bad. It's nothing important." There was a sour note in Martin's voice. John wished he could see Martin's face right now, but he would settle for pressing a kiss to Martin's neck. There, a small flutter of Martin's pulse, and a hint of subtle pressed back. I don't know how to impress upon you that I care about how you're feeling, Martin. If you can get over how much of an ass I was, you weren't, then you can tell me when you're feeling down." John could feel Martin's shoulder rise and fall with a sigh, wrapped in the man's arm as he was. The breath of it ghosted across his neck, and he decided he needed to see Martin properly. John propped himself up on his hands, looking down at Martin still laid on the bed. The man turned his head to the side, avoiding his eyes, and John almost laughed. What a mirror from earlier. "It's not that simple," Martin said. "I'm not saying it is. I'm just asking of you what you ask of me. Take care of yourself and talk to me more." John adjusted his knee to free up one hand, which he threaded into Martin's hair. It was honestly hard to stop touching it, a fluffy warmth reminding him of the serene moments of petting the Admiral. John played with a curl between two of his fingers, feeling Martin twitch slightly, before pressing back into John's hand. John smiled, and leaned in to give him a short kiss. "Can you try?" Martin huffed a breath through his nose, and smiled. "I can,
If you will too.
Do you think it worked?
How do I know?
Oh, come on, Sash. Give me your best guess.
Tim's voice replied, whiny, muffled, and distant.
How many objectives do you think we can hit?
Martin felt warm and comfortable despite whatever was currently digging into his sternum. He was not ready to wake up in any capacity. In fact, Martin was currently feeling a level of contentment rarely achieved by most humans. Naps were a gift from the gods, he was sure. It didn't matter that this was at work.
Wait, he was napping at work?
What is this, a video game?
Sasha's voice replied, similarly muffled to Tim's.
I don't think John and Martin would appreciate being likened to some game.
Video games? Aren't I at work?
Okay, sure, but how many did we get, though?
Did I pass out at Tim's again or something?
Well, we still have no idea what prank we're going to do next.
Everyone knows this prank war is coming to an end.
Somehow, the thought didn't make Martin as sad as it usually did.
Don't say that word I could hear!
Oh, get over yourself, Stoker. We all know you're losing steam.
Winning feels good, Martin thought smugly. He tried to adjust his arms a bit, only to find that they were a bit trapped.
I'm losing steam? How dare you, Miss James?
That was weird. He didn't own any weighted blankets, and none of his pillows were that heavy.
And I don't wish James made John rest for several hours in the middle of the workday, or they snuck out.
They made John rest?
Martin would have to give them an award, once he figured out where he was, and why he had been napping. Maybe he should think about opening his eyes. But he was so comfortable.
Ah.
The knot pillow in his arm shifted, and Martin decided he would have to wake up after all.
Yeah, so if they have snuck out, we failed. But if they didn't, well...
Martin heard the creaking of the door and groaned.
Farewell, sleep.
If Tim and Sasha were here, there was no way Martin could continue to rest, even if he wanted to. He opened his eyes and...
Achievement unlocked, Tim said.
John was on his chest?
Oh god, he was still asleep.
Well, he was waking up, stirred by Tim shouting into the room. But he didn't seem to want to wake up, actually, seeing as John tightened his grip on Martin and tried to push his face further into Martin's chest. And his chin. Ow. So that was where the pointy thing in his sternum was from. John, apparently. Martin wasn't sure he was firing on all cylinders yet. Martin was sure he was supposed to be doing something else. He should probably get up, try to unwind himself from John, or acknowledge Tim and Sasha's presence. But he was too absorbed in watching John right now. Tim and Sasha would have to forgive him, just this once. John's usually immaculate hair had been messed up entirely, most of it falling out of its bun and cascading over his face in gentle waves. There was even a small bit that seemed cold in his mouth, which shouldn't have been endearing, but it definitely was. The silver in John's hair glinted ever so slightly in the light from the now open door, and Martin had to look at something else before his brain started to go on about silver moonlight on dark ways. Looking at John's face instead proved not much better, however. The usual disgruntled expression was wiped off of his face, replaced by smooth brows and a perfect, slightly parted cupid's bow. His eyelashes were absurdly long, honestly, and if Martin were a painter he would spend hours just to get them right.
Oh god, he was in too deep.
You doing alright there, Martin? Sasha asked, a grin evident in her tone. Finally, Martin looked up at her,
and saw that she was standing with her hands on her hips, grinning like a cat who got the cream. Tim, next to her, seemed to be doing some sort of dance? Martin wasn't sure. I will say, I didn't expect locking you two in as a prank would work quite this well, Sasha said, and Martin remembered. They, he and John, had been locked in document storage. And then, they had... Oh. Martin could feel a grin spreading across his own face, but he couldn't be damned to hide it. He had kissed John. He had kissed John. He, Martin Blackwood, had kissed Jonathan Sims, his boss and friend and lovely, lovely human person that Martin has had a crush on for ages. A crush he'd never expected to go anywhere. Apparently, it wasn't so ill-fated after all. I may have to admit Tim was right about this one, Sasha was saying, if it's making you grin that much. Martin sat up ever so carefully, trying not to jostle John too much, and moved a hand over his mouth. I knew it, Tim crowed, and even as Sasha rolled her eyes, the grin still didn't leave her face. Martin looked down at John on his chest once again, and noticed something new. John's brows were pulled together once more, looking closer to that scar Martin was fondly familiar with. His face twitched. John was awake, right? His eyelids fluttered, opening and quickly shutting right as his eyes met Martin's. Martin watched as John's cheek slowly darkened in color, and the corners of his mouth twitched. Almost impossible to see under this light, but Martin was close enough to tell. John was awake, and was playing asleep, Martin guessed. Because he was embarrassed? That was really cute. Martin looked back at Tim and Sasha, who were talking to each other, since Martin hadn't responded. I think this means that I should get the Employee of the Month award. I helped our boss with his romantic relationships. That should warrant some favoritism. Tim was arguing. First of all, I have had just as much to do with this as you, and two, it's much more likely John will thank you privately and then never bring it up at work ever again. It would be unprofessional, Sasha said, gesturing triumphantly to make her point. Okay, first, it was my idea to lock them in together, so I have bigger dibs on the favoritism than you do, and second, John thanking me privately would be more than enough to get me Employee of the Month. I still don't think you do enough of your work to qualify. I have done precisely enough of my work to qualify. Can you guys go be qualified at work somewhere else, please? You guys tossed us into a badly lit closet for an undefined number of hours? Martin asked flatly. He was trying to come off annoyed to get Tim and Sasha to go, but he was still too giddy. Wow, try to sound sad about that fact, Martin. It's not like we were helping you or anything, Tim said, gesturing to where John lay on top of Martin. Yeah, Martin, we helped so much and you're kicking us out, Sasha said. Yes, Martin replied stubbornly. Fine, see if I give you any more help. No patented stoker date advice for you and the boss man. I know where I stand, Tim said, faking breaking into sobs as he left the room. Sasha gave a double thumbs up and winked to Martin as she walked backwards out of the room. And almost ran backwards into Tim, who jumped away and closed the door. Well, that was one way to make an exit. Martin waited for a few moments before shifting again and looking down at John. The furrow in his brow was so cute, Martin just wanted to press his lips to it and smooth it out. Instead, he just murmured, "They're gone, John." John peeked one eye open, then sprang back from Martin's chest. Was that all real? John said in a tone of voice that matched the exclamation points ringing out in Martin's own mind. Yes, I believe so, Martin said, and he was still smiling. John smiled back, relieved, and deflated back the line on Martin's chest. Good. Remind me of that again when I wake up later, John said into Martin's throat. Good night. Martin couldn't stop from laughing as he flopped down, wrapping an arm around John's waist. John clung to Martin like a koala. Or maybe an octopus. Martin yelped as he felt John kiss the dip at the bottom of his throat and squeezed John in revenge. We'll get dinner, too, when I wake up, John said. Then again, good night. Yes, good night, John, Martin said. He smiled and resigned himself to taking another nap. He had said naps were a gift, and with John in his arms like this, it sure felt like one. As he slowly drifted off again, all Martin could think was that he was glad he had risked pranking John that first time. He just wanted some acknowledgement, some revenge on how unfair and mean John had always been, and how untouchably pretty. Martin had hoped for a simple apology, but he had gotten something much better. The end.